Welcome to 167 Hours Beyond Sunday, a companion podcast to the sermons of Crossroads Christian Church in Gray, Tennessee, where we try to go beyond the message and talk about what life looks like in the 167 hours we are not in church during the week. I am not your host, Ryan Evans. I am, in fact, Ryan Hughes, and today I'm joined by our prior host and soon to be a host again, student minister Ryan Evans. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm doing good. It's so weird, man. It is very strange to be on this side of the table. I'm on the, literally we switched chairs here.
We did switch chairs. I'm the captain now.
You have all the, literally the computers over there, all the recording equipment. I'm just over here with just myself and a microphone and some notes. I'm uncomfortable.
Great.
I've lost all the power.
And now you know how the rest of us feel when we sit over there and we have to do this. So welcome. We're glad you're here.
Thanks, man.
Ryan, you are the student minister here at Crossroads.
Yep.
Dude, it's got to be wild for you working in COVID right now. So what's some stuff that y'all have been doing with the student ministry over here?
Well, I'll start by saying like a lot of life activity, everything feels like a little bit of a shadow of what it was. I think, I've always believed that the real value of most ministry is community and being able to be together and share life together. And that's kind of been lost. So everything feels a little crummy. This is me being completely honest. We've attempted to make the most of that. We've figured out a way to do some in-person worship stuff. Mm-hmm. This Wednesday, we're doing an in-person student worship thing. Hopefully, we can keep doing that. Who knows with the current climate and where things are going. But we've, me and an intern have been doing a lot of online content, like very YouTube-ified student ministry. Mm-hmm. Everything from, throwing fruit at him while he's holding a sword to recording me on a green screen and a robe and some flowy hair, doing just trying our best to be engaging and entertaining. It's creatively challenging, to be honest with you, but it's been fun at times.
Yeah, no doubt. But as someone who's gotten to watch from the outside and participate in some of the crazy concoctions you've come up with, your team is knocking it out of the park. So y'all are doing.
What's funny about you saying us coming up with crazy concoctions is that one of the bits that has been recurring is a Chef Ryan bit where you basically feed us something gross every week that you've cooked or prepared.
I mean, yeah, you're not wrong, and that has brought me a lot of joy, probably more so than the students. But and just in the interest of honesty here, I took it easy on you.
Yeah, there was a certain, by the end of it, I was like, I think he's definitely friending me a little bit.
Well, yeah, you're a new father, which we'll get to that here in just a moment. You've got a lot to stick around for here. Charlie, the intern, is just here for the ride. He needs to experience the good intern stuff, right? So he needs
absolutely.
To eat weird food and get fruit tossed at him. So we're putting him through the ringer. Yeah. By the way, bury the lead here. New dad.
Yeah, man.
During all of this chaos of the COVID-19 pandemic,
oof,
you and Megan thought it wise to have a kid, right? You chose to do that in the middle of this pandemic.
Well, in our defense, we were trying before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And we got pregnant before
anything happened, really.
Yeah, it was I think it was October. It was right. There was beginnings to be the whispers of conversation around this thing.
Yep.
But yeah, man, that was being pregnant during a pandemic is not a cool time, especially
stuff.
When, say pregnant women were at risk. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had to batten down the hatches and it was pretty crazy there for a little while.
Yeah, but everyone's doing well at the Evans house. Ellie and Meg are doing good.
Yeah, she's 3.5 months old now.
That's
which
wild.
Is, it has flown by. She's a tiny mite. Mm-hmm. She is just now crossing the threshold of 10 pounds when some babies are born that way.
That you're looking at one.
Yeah. But she's weirdly developmentally ahead. So she's already rolling over to her stomach. She's very active, very crazy. She's going to be a handful. Mm-hmm. She's just going to be this tiny little girl that's just running around crazy and stubborn. We can already see some stubborn tendencies,
and we
which
would
will be
have
fun.
It no other way.
Which will be, but it's been cool, man. It's definitely challenging, in a completely different kind of way. You have to, you've learned a lot about yourself. That first month, granted, we don't have grandparents or anything nearby, so it was really just me and Megan taking the brunt of it. But geez whiz, when you're sleep deprived, it's hard to think rationally. And
absolutely.
It was pretty nuts.
Well, and I know we could spend the remainder of our time on this podcast here talking about new parenthood, and maybe one day that'll be a topic of conversation for the podcast. But today we are at the round table of podcasting, and we have a goal. We are going to talk about yesterday's sermon that Patrick Mitchell brought, and he taught us about judgment.
Yeah, that was a tough one. When I saw that topic on the list, I thought, oof, whoever gets to step up to the plate on that one's gonna have a fun time. I think this was probably my favorite sermon that Patrick has taught since he's been here.
Yeah, he knocked it out of the park. And you know, equally daunting to follow up the killer sermon comes the job of doing a killer podcast.
We'll see what we can do.
Well, I think this is going to be a good conversation for us to have today. So let me just start us off here. Yesterday, Patrick kicked off the sermon with some hot fire. He said, "Would you rather God judge you in the same way that you judge others, or would you prefer God to be more gracious with you than you are with others?" Now, it seems like a pretty easy question. You know, of course, we would prefer God to be more gracious to us.
Absolutely.
You know, bold, italic, underscore us.
Yeah.
However, upon closer investigation, this question exposes a pretty hard reality that we are really, really quick to cast the harshest judgment on those around us.
Yeah.
So, you know, we could probably go for a long time, but how have you experienced this in your life? Have you encountered some harsh judgments upon you, or you sending out, you know, harsh vibes to other people?
Well, I thought about this and this question for a while, and it made me think of two different kind of stories. So I'll throw myself under the bus first, and then I'll throw someone else.
as long as I'm not one of them.
No, you're not.
Fantastic.
You know, I was thinking back when I became a Christian like in early high school. I did church stuff when I was younger, but I didn't really understand what was going on. And I was a little bit of a ruffian, one might say, in middle school. I mean, at least I thought I was really cool at the time with me, you know, like my baggy jean shorts my Discman walking around the neighborhood with and my visor turned around,
that
flipped
was where
upside
I was
down.
Headed, just to really paint the picture for everybody.
Yes. Yeah, I was a stupid kid, and I really did get in the wrong crowd, and I did some stupid things. But the church really was a good place for me, like to like give me purpose and turn me around. And it's so interesting because I'm saying all this, like I was a punk and I was given forgiveness and love and cared for and accepted. But with all that in mind, like especially the first few years, even probably into my first year of college, I saw the world very black and white. Like I saw I would say I was probably one of the more judgmental Christians out there, which doesn't seem to really make sense when you consider my past. But I think, you know, it's maturity and time that has really kind of taught me to value forgiveness and mercy and grace and giving people some leeway. Part of it for me, something Patrick mentioned yesterday that was really insightful to me is, he says, you know, when you're looking through the lens and judging people, you have to be careful to make sure that your lens isn't dirty. I had a dirty lens for a good while. If I'm like, I heard Christian concepts, but I didn't know, I didn't understand. Like a casual example of that is, you know, like I was taught when I was younger, well, all forms of tobacco are bad. That's a sin, which is ironic because it's not even in the Bible. I mean, it's literally not even in there. And, you know, like obviously there's health issues and you can get into that, but like, being mad at someone for having a cigar or pipes, like, what's the point of that?
Right.
But that was me because I was young, dumb, and stupid. But I wonder if this is like a common thing, especially for younger, like, Christians who haven't like really learned or grown in wisdom. Because another story I thought about was I have a relative who was a drug dealer who went to jail.
Okay. Not going to name names here.
No. And I know that like they're, so fun fact, they're like a preacher now.
Okay.
They're doing well. I think they've come a long way. But like, I remember, you know, like probably a couple months after they were saved, like, you know, they were accepted. We were at church and a homosexual couple came in and sat in the pews and the church didn't make a fuss about it. They didn't, you know, it wasn't a big deal.
Sure.
You're more than welcome. My uncle who perceives, you know, homosexuality as sin, which is, you know, like he, for him, he was so upset that the church was allowing sinners in the door. And I remember sitting across the table from him being like, what?
It's kind of antithetical to the church, right?
Like, what? And I'm like, dude, you were in jail. You were a drug dealer.
Right.
And it's, but it's, yeah, I don't know what the disconnect in our minds is, but there's something to that, that we, it is so much easier for us to see what's wrong with others than to recognize what's wrong with us.
Yeah. And that's, that goes, you know, a little bit to what you're saying about putting that lens up, and we're going to get to this here in a minute, but the concept of, you know, putting something up to your eye to look through gets really hard when you've got a big old 2x4 sticking through it, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely some things in it, and there's all, like, it is one of the greatest things I've learned is that a lot of the sin that I'm like, oh, this is wrong, was more a cultural perspective than biblical.
Yeah. And that was something else I was thinking about. You know, it's really easy when we're young and full of vigor and we're excited to learn all these new things, and things can easily become black or white.
Yeah.
You know, I dare say you and I were in the same kind of boat when we entered into college, and looking back now, I don't know that I would be friends with.
Oh no, I would hate freshman Ryan. and we wanted so much attention at the time.
Well, yeah, but you know, praise Jesus, we fought through it and now we're here. But like you said, culture and context really shapes and makes it very easy to live in that black and white. And then when you go out and experience other things, it starts to get a little bit more gray and hard to define, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah, I think, so spoiler alert for the December 13th sermon that I'm preaching. And one of the main topics of this is when we replace wisdom and discernment with legalism and knowledge as Christians, we're going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
So there's a teaser for what's coming.
And if you want to pretend like you have foresight and are really in tune with what's happening in the future, you can drop that quote to someone before Ryan says it and be like, wow, I'm wise.
Yeah.
So
there you go.
So Patrick also brought up the point that you can always tell when someone is judging you because they are for you. Now, I thought this was an interesting theory here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, judgment is not necessarily bad.
No.
It's not the four-letter word that we have made it out to be in this current era. Judgment can be used for good. And he made the point that judgment can be used for you.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you interpret that to mean?
So the straight statement, you can always tell when someone is judging for you. I agree and disagree with it, like off the bat. But I think and here's what I mean by that. If you are an insecure person, to a certain degree, it doesn't matter how pure someone's motives are. You can potentially not hear them very well, which I think is something we all have to be. If in our brains we are so correct that no one else's perspective is valuable, then we have an insecurity problem we need to deal with, or a pride problem or something. Like, there's definitely some of that we had to work through. But with that in mind, like, yeah, absolutely, there are people in my life who can very easily talk to me, and it's not nearly as big of a deal. You know, but on the flip side, like, if I've been in conversations where I'm like, you have an ulterior motive right now, or, oh, you're trying to like win me onto your side, or I immediately become skeptical of that. Also, people who don't know me very well, anyone who I'm like, I've met you and talked to you three times and you're like, it feels like you're trying to mentor me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm immediately skeptical of that just cause I'm like, hey, like you haven't earned this.
Right.
You absolutely haven't earned this.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say this for me. I think one of the most valuable things in my life is invited discipleship conversations. So there are people in my lives who are pretty comfortable speaking into it, not because they chose to, but because I invited them to.
Right.
Which I think is a really, like, it just kind of takes down all the defense mechanisms. You know, like Larry and Curtis both can very easily talk to me about things. But that's also because I've asked them to.
For sure.
you know, and that varies from things of importance as, here's a script for the sermon I'm about to preach, give me some notes, mm-hmm. or, hey, the situation's driving me nuts, I need some perspective.
Right.
And, you know, I think there's something really valuable. You know, discipleship's all throughout Scripture. We suck at it in the church.
Yeah.
We don't do it. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know why, how. I think our culture is just so different now.
Yeah.
And I think maybe we've replaced, like, what discipleship was with probably the modern school system. I could spend a long time theorizing about this, but I won't. But yeah. But I think one of the things that is most valuable is if we seek people and invite them to speak into our lives, because that really eliminates all the awkwardness.
Yeah, and that's, you know, we've talked about this a lot, and I know I have said it before, but we always need to take the posture of Paul, right? So mm-hmm. we need to have a Barnabas who's speaking into our own lives.
Yeah.
We need to be, you know, at the feet of someone who is ahead of us, who has gone where we want to go and seek their own wisdom. But it's also our responsibility to, in turn, turn around and find a Timothy that we can pour into.
Yeah, absolutely.
And repeat that cycle. That is one of the things that I try to be ever mindful of.
Yeah.
We have got to continually be pouring into other people if we want to see this thing called the church succeed in our wake. Like, once we're gone, you mm-hmm. know, and you and I are 30, we still hopefully have a long time to go. But we need to start now.
Yeah.
We need to have started 6 years ago, you know, finding people who, you know, in business lingo, you need to find your own replacement, you know, work yourself out of a job. That's kind of the goal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's our responsibility to find those people who we are going to pour into as well. But also, we need to accept, you know, we need to give people permission to speak into our own lives.
Yeah. Well, and like, you know, so some of that, I think some of the age things that happen in our minds when it comes to stuff, I think you and I still very much think of ourselves as young and like we are the future.
No.
We probably shouldn't be. We should probably be thinking more of ourselves as the now. But you know, that's just because the life expectancy has gotten longer, right? Like, when the disciples were with Jesus, they mm-hmm. weren't in their 20s or 30s. They were teenagers. Some of them are teenagers.
Yeah.
So isn't that crazy to think about? Isn't it crazy to think about, like, college age kids were like running the church when it first happened? That sounds terrifying to me.
Yeah. I know college kids. I was a college kid.
No, thank you. I don't know if we've just gotten dumber over time or what the problem is, but it's weird to think about.
Probably for sure, though.
Yeah.
So let's take this to scripture for a little while here. In Matthew 7, Jesus used the illustration of the speck and the log in someone's eye. We're you know, pretty familiar with this illustration mm-hmm. here. We've all heard it. It may just be me. I can't speak for you, but I was actually in Patrick's office a couple of days ago, and he was working on some of this material, and he said the phrase that he then took into the sermon. He probably had been workshopping it for a while, but he said, think about how close you have to be to take a splinter out of someone's eye.
Yeah.
That was a pretty big aha for me, and it helped something click in a different way. And then he talked about it later on, and he talked about the Twitter tweezers that, you know, you can't use tweezers over Twitter to get a splinter out of someone's eye. But the concept of the actual proximity you have to be into someone's eye, the delicacy you have to use, you have to be precise, you have to be delicate, because you don't want to harm the person.
Yeah. Well, and not to mention the trust the person
exactly
has to have to let you do that.
Exactly. I was talking to a friend of mine months ago now. We were working on a big project here, and he had recently gotten a piece of rust in his eye, or not rust, but a piece of metal in his eye, and it had rusted.
Yikes.
And so when Patrick was talking about this speck in the eye thing, my head went to that.
Yeah.
And that was gnarly to look at.
Yeah.
I would not want to be the person to take that out of his eye.
No.
Because I am not, I've not been given that kind of permission. And I dare say he wouldn't want me to do it either.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, I mean, there's a lot to this. I mean, trust is the easiest word for, you know, I think Christians who stand at a distance calling out sin you know, with their signs. Mm-hmm. They're not accomplishing anything. People, you know, Patrick did a really good job of calling this. I gotta say, social media is not a place for evangelism and judgment. No. I've taken a pretty solid break from Facebook in general, just because it's been an unhealthy place for me. It's a constant source of temptation for me. The best authentic, good accountability type judgment mm-hmm. conversations I've had, either with those doing it for me or me doing it for others, is all based on trust and genuine care. Curtis and Larry can say, hey, this, think about it. And I can hear them well. You know, you and I have we are very close. If you said you should, it would mean a lot to me because I know you care about me. You also wouldn't be a jerk about it, you know, and just like
it depends on the situation, but
we've given each other free counseling several times over, over different topics and different situations. My wife, she's not the gentle, she's more of the rip the Band-Aid doctor off, than the tweezers in the eye probably, but she can be the first thing I thought of with this question was, I can't tell you how many times something happens with like a student and the parents will be like, I need you to talk to them. Mm. And there's pretty much two versions of that. The version where I have a good relationship with the kid mm-hmm. and it's no big deal.
Right.
I can, you know, be thoughtful. I can approach it. I can even be kind of blunt and it can be fine. But if I don't have a relationship with that kid, it is pointless. It is pointless for me to have that conversation with them. In fact, it's going to pretty much eliminate the opportunity for me to even have a relationship with them in the future.
Right.
Because who is this punk? You know, I've gotten to the point in my ministry where if a parent really forces that upon me, I won't even talk to the kid about it the first time. I'll just be like, hey, let's go get ice cream.
Begin to develop that relationship.
Yeah. And then once I kind of sense, and I might even ask, like, hey, can we talk about this? Sure. You know, let them, which is I'm just thinking out loud now, but like asking permission to speak into things.
Absolutely.
Is not a horrible idea if you're not sure if you have that relationship or the right with someone.
Yeah. And that, you know, that you walk a very delicate line.
Yeah.
When you go into someone's, you know, personal issues and you say, hey, let me take this out of your eye here. You know?
Yeah.
Because you're invading someone's personal space if you're not welcomed into it. And that's awful.
Yeah. And I really believe that I teach and guide best from a perspective of humility than know-it-allness, for lack of better terms.
Know-it-allitude.
Know-it-allitude. Yeah, that's the one. I've made so many mistakes. So, like, whenever I talk to a kid, I'm like, listen, trust me, you're way better than I was. Mm-hmm. You got this more figured out than I, you know, or I think I see this, but man, I get it. I struggle with that too. You know, we still have to maintain a posture of humility. Curtis is really good at that. Sometimes I will talk to Curtis about things,
right,
and I'm always so surprised by how willing he is to be like, yeah, I don't have it figured out either.
Yeah, and that's huge.
And it means it takes a burden off of me mm-hmm. because it's the people that pretend, because they don't actually, the people who pretend to have it all figured out, I don't get them. Like, what's good on you?
You have a lot of trust in yourself. That's true. Man, there was a moment in the sermon yesterday where, I got the opportunity to listen to it twice because I was, you know, obviously there for both services.
Mm-hmm.
In both services, the room got silent. You know, there's always a little bit of ambient noise, kind of, you know, papers crinkling and all this stuff happening around. But there was a moment where things just dropped and there was a palpable feeling of, ooh, he said that in the room. And it was when he started talking about, you're not Democrat, you're not Republican, you're not a capitalist, you're not a socialist, you're not Fox News, you're not CNN.
Yeah.
He went, I mean, and that, you know, in a real palpable way, that's going for the jugular, because so often, so many of us have become wrapped up, specifically in this political season.
Yeah.
We've become wrapped up in red and blue, wrong and right, and we can't even see the person over the party line.
Yeah.
And that's really, really awful. It's not who we are. And Patrick, you know, wrapped that all up in saying, you are a son and a daughter of God. You are a child of the kingdom. You're not what the world says you are. This is who you are.
Yeah.
How have you seen that play out? Because it's, I know, like, dropping the hammer on you here, but and it kind of goes along with this. You know, he said, put down the magnifying glass and pick up the mirror, yeah. Right?
So there's a lot to unpack from what you just said there. Mm-hmm. So I'll speak to what I observe, and then I'll speak on myself.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an Enneagram 9. Which, for those of you who don't speak the stupid hipster language of Enneagram, it means that, like, at the end of the day, the thing I value most is peace.
So this must be awful for you, right?
Yes.
Now.
So, like, to be honest with you, and this is kind of why I had to step away from Facebook. Mm-hmm. It's why I have to be really guarded in some conversations, because it genuinely breaks my heart that people see things so simply that they can't have thoughtful conversations with others.
Right.
I do not understand people. I genuinely, sorry to be insensitive, I chalk it up to ignorance when you say, well, it's this simple on this topic. Like, no, it's actually not.
Yeah. It's never this simple.
It's rarely that simple. And so it's really hard for me, and people's inability to have thoughtful conversations about tough topics. It has really affected me in some pretty negative ways. My temptation often is to trick myself into thinking that I can be the one to talk to that person and have the thoughtful conversation. Sometimes that's true. Most of the times it's not. But yeah, that's been a source of real tension. And even in this season, we talk about, you know, with all the COVID stuff going on, mm-hmm. and being involved in church leadership decisions right now, man, it's been, I've had like moments where I've sat on my basement floor, like having panic attacks practically, because I'm so sad because people are so black and white on stuff. Like, this was wrong, or this is the exact right thing to do. It's like, no one knows.
Yeah,
what the exact right thing to do is right now. Can we all give each other a little grace?
Yeah, it's never been more evident than right now that there is not one right decision. Yeah. Am I right? Because we're trying to see things from all angles and do the best we can with all information, but it's difficult. And it's no way you cut it. You're gonna upset somebody who's working in all of this. And it's because we're starting to see, you know, issues over people.
Yeah.
Right? So how do we, you know, I kind of alluded to this already, but how do we put down that magnifying glass where we're just holding everyone under scrutiny for, you know, hours and days and months and years, and pick up a mirror and start doing some self-reflection and start to learn about that? So, like, some practical ways that we can do that. And in the words of wonderful philosopher Michael Jackson, start with the man or woman in the mirror.
Yeah. I'm probably not going to do as good of a job answering this practically for everyone, but I will answer it practically for myself.
Well, and that's all I can ask.
I think the largest thing that I've had to come to grips with, and this is probably more of a lifetime journey than this season has amplified the truth, is that we cannot control others, nor should we expect to be able to. Mm-hmm. Everyone has their own junk going on, their own perspectives, their own cultural information, their own, like you said, it's very rarely simply right or wrong. So one of the things I've had to come to grips with, and I think this sermon has kind of led to this well, is, in this season when I feel so frustrated, I've felt angry, I felt sad, and I've thought so often, everyone just needs to get their crap together. And then enough time has passed and I realized, okay, that's not an option. Mm-hmm. I can't control everyone else. Everyone else isn't going to change in this. What can I do? How can I respond to this better? How can I be less angry? How can I be less sad? How can I be less frustrated? You and I have had serious conversations where I've told you, it's like, I've got to find the stress relief valve on my brain instead of letting it keep building. So for me, like right now, the most practical thing I'm doing is that this Friday, actually, I'm having my first counseling session I've ever had.
Yeah, that's great.
Which is something I've talked about before and I've considered doing. I've put it off at times. And it's like, I know that I am really good at understanding others and talking to others and having the hard conversations. But if I'm going to keep doing that well, that means I have to learn how to process things and let things go too. Mm-hmm. So I think everyone's personality is different. And I think this looks different for different people. What the look at yourself in the mirror, change, reflect how you deal with things part is. For some people, it might be letting go of some pride and insecurity. Mm-hmm. For some people, it might be just admitting I'm tired and I need some help. For some people, it's I've got to go process things with a counselor. Mm-hmm. For some people, it's recognizing how much your culture is affecting your faith and realize, you know, and starting to dissect which of those is which and maybe growing in your perspective a little bit. It just varies from person to person. But I know for this guy, my crazy brain needs a place to parse things. So.
Yeah, I hear you. And I want to take a second there to just say going to a counselor is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I've done it before and it's yielded some good fruit in my life. I actually started going to see I found a spiritual director who I've started spending some time with every other week for about an hour, doing it over Zoom, it's a more
safe,
I suppose.
Yeah.
Secure version of Zoom that's specifically for something like that. But those are some really quick and easy ways, and we highly recommend them. It's great for you. Please feel no shame in going to seek anyone about that. That is fantastic work to be done.
One thing I'm convinced of is if you're walking around constantly angry, frustrated, upset, like, you cannot expect other people to solve that problem for you.
Right. It's like driving around in a car that's making a weird noise and taking it to your buddy down the road.
All your dash lights are on.
Yeah. Taking it to your buddy down the road who's, you know, not a mechanic.
Yeah.
And saying, hey, fix this.
Yeah.
And then getting mad when it's not working, as opposed to taking it into a mechanic who's been trained on it and knows how to fix it. Ryan, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for the conversation. And thank you to everyone who's been tuning in, who's joined us this week. If you are on iTunes and you don't mind, please give us a 5-star rating and maybe even a review. If you want to keep up with all of Crossroads activities and find more content, we're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Find us on any of those platforms by searching Crossroads Christian. There's all kinds of content for adults and kids and teenagers and everywhere you look, there's going to be people. This is weird for me to do. This is your job.
So fun to watch, man.
This is your job. But hey, there's all kinds of stuff out there for everybody to find. But more than all of that, please make the most of the rest of your 167 hours. We'll catch you next time.